some proof today of America's economic tilt toward Asia, even beyond China. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. President Obama is hosting a two-day summit for the leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations starting today. Heads of state from 10 ASEAN countries, including Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore, Cambodia, and others, will join President Obama and in a state in Southern California. This is the first time the group has gathered for a standalone summit in the U.S. On the agenda are sessions dedicated to economic and security issues. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson has more on the U.S.-Asia-Pacific bond.
Filed this summit under President Obama's ongoing pivot to Asia. And Southeast Asia offers some particular opportunities and challenges. Christian Lewis covers the region for Eurasia Group.
I have a lot of young people who are moving into working age population. This obviously bodes very well for their economic potential over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Compare with Japan or Korea, where you have aging populations.
Already, economic ties between U.S. and ASEAN countries are deep and growing. Collectively, they're America's fourth largest trading partner. Four ASEAN countries are part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a pending trade agreement.
But part of the issue is there's also growing economic inequality, which is fostering some political discontent.
Jim Schoaf with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace says political development in the region hasn't kept up with economic development.
I think the United States thinks there's an opportunity to contribute here and preserve stability and foster even more growth down the line.
I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Some big food companies are trying to change their product formulations these days, in some cases to include healthier ingredients. In the processed food industry, a big word is mouthfeel. Is it crispy? Is it mealy? To bring some objectivity to what can be subjective judgments about mouthfeel, some food companies have hired robots with a smart mouth. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has this oral report.
30 years ago, some guys at the University of Minnesota's dentistry school built a robot that could chew up a storm.
It chews four times faster than the normal human.
Ralph DeLong was one of the inventors. He built the mechanical mouth to test dental restoration materials. The robot could put wear and tear on them a lot faster than humans could, and of course, cost a lot less to employ.
For a material that you want to test for 5 years, in 1 week you have the result.
The latest version of the robot can give feedback on what it's chewing, which has prompted a few big food companies, who didn't want to be named, to do tests with it.
To start out, we would put whatever food we want on top of that.
The minders of the robot feed it some cereal, which the robot then chews with its six little teeth.
Go slow and fast.
That one cycle of chewing might not sound like much, but the dentistry school's Alex Falk says the audio frequencies, which they capture in a computer, are actually quite meaningful.
We believe that ultimately crispiness can be quantified by things like the frequency content coming out from those sounds, that's crispy sounds.
So food companies can use the robot to compare the crispiness of an already successful product with its healthier reformulation, which might have less sugar or less salt. Here's Ralph DeLong again.
Sugar doesn't just make a product sweet, and salt doesn't just make it salty. They also have chemical interactions with the other things that affect the texture of the food.
Food marketing expert John Stanton says the robotic mouth is just one example of how food companies are trying to make texture and taste more scientific.
And they're using not only physiological models, but they have more sophisticated statistical models.
But apparently, there's only some accounting for taste. Stanton says, unlike robots, people come with all sorts of messy biases about food, which companies still have to consider at some point in developing products. In St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
For a momentarily mesmerizing look at the robotic mouth chattering away, pop on over to marketplace.org and click Mentioned on Air, and you can see the little jaws. You'll see. Would you rather take a bus or a trolley? There's a deliberateness with streetcars that many people find compelling, contrasted with the seeming randomness of a bus with those steel rails. That has to mean the streetcar must show up here sometime, right? And streetcar lines are very popular these days with urban planners. New York is the latest place to consider one at a cost of some $2.5 billion, which is dramatically less than digging a subway. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports on our new love affair with streetcars. New York sees a streetcar as a way to help out the Brooklyn-Queens waterfront. Wiley Norvell is the mayor's deputy press secretary.
This is where the jobs, the manufacturing, the housing is all being built. And yet it's a part of the city that really wasn't mapped well with the transportation system.
Modern streetcars are like mustache wax and pretentious coffee. We're seeing a lot more of them because of Portland. Its streetcar system is a monster hit, credited with sparking economic development and popular with riders. Other cities want to match that success, but as far as ridership and cost effectiveness, they've done
not very well, unfortunately, compared to an average bus.
Florida State University urban planning professor Jeff Brown is author of a multi-city report on streetcars. Co-author Hillary Nixon says new streetcar projects actually tend to be less about transit.
It's often seen as a way to rejuvenate development.
Big backers of streetcar projects are real estate developers. They believe streetcars signal potential tenants that an area is up and coming. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
And it's Breaking Bad meets Victoria's Secret in Australia today. A massive bust. Police have seized $1.2 billion worth of liquid methamphetamine, with some of it smuggled in the gel inserts and a shipment of push-up bras. The Australians worked with Chinese authorities. Two people from Hong Kong, one from China's mainland, were arrested. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.